Like to introduce to you Morwena Gibbon, who is a medical herbalist, and to give her perspective on that approach to cancer treatment.
Thank you very much. Good evening, and thank you very much for inviting me. I have got some copies of the presentation on the side, but if we run out because I didn't print very many, then please leave me your email address, nicely clearly printed, and I'm very happy to send it to you. I don't expect many of you will have heard of what a medical herbalist is, because there's only five of us in Ontario. There's rather more in BC, but not in this province. And we are quite special. You can't, alas, train in Ontario. You have to go overseas, and in my case, I went to the UK. And it's a training that combines university, hospital, and clinic environments, hence the medical bit, as well as the herbalist bit. And I currently practice in downtown Toronto, focusing on cancer and precancerous conditions, because medical herbalism is particularly appropriate for cancer. And to explain a little bit about who I am, I've done a table which is a comparison between my training, a medical doctor, and a naturopath, and you will see there are some quite significant differences. I'm very similar to a medical doctor. I am nothing like a naturopath. And the key one here is that I do no surgery, no internal examinations, whereas a medical doctor does. But I am a specialist in the same way as an oncologist is a specialist, but I'm a specialist in plant medicine, which means that I do 2 to 3 times more training in pharmacology, biochemistry, and phytochemistry that any doctor ever does. That means, in turn, we are very familiar with the drugs, the drug interactions, and the contraindications of modern-day pharmacology. But we combine that with traditional medicine, that is to say, looking at the body in a holistic manner, with diet and anything else that's needed. So, having explained a little bit of who I am, what is cancer? Well, actually, cancer is an endocrine metabolic disease, and that's it. It arises through a period of constant inflammation and uncontrolled growth of cells. Now, we've known that since Hippocrates, 2,000 years ago, the Nobel Prize winners in 1931, and more recently in 2008, totally validated that, yet again, never mind any specialist research papers. And moreover, Otto Warburg, with his research, he actually won 2 Nobel Prizes. But his research in 1928-29 and then culminating in the prize in 1931 showed that sugar provides the glycolic shift in making a cancer cell cancerous from a non-cancerous state. That is such an important aspect of cancer. And it doesn't matter where cancer is in your body, it's valid for all cancers. Now, I come back, and this is very important in understanding how we approach cancer. It's an endocrine metabolic disease. In your case, it is chosen to express itself in a visible form in the prostate. But the same mechanism is entirely at work at all other cancers in the body, whatever description is given to them. And it's called prostate cancer simply because conventional medicine is organized vertically. So it relates to the vertical place in their organization. It doesn't actually refer to the mechanics of the disease. Okay, let's look at mortality. Before 1944, cancer wasn't even in the top 10 causes of death. And these figures are taken from the States around Canada because, alas, we don't have 100 years of comparison from coast to coast. But nonetheless, they're equally valid here, and today we match the US figures virtually identically. So suddenly in 1944, the top 2 causes of mortality are cardiac disease, CVS, and cancer. From 1944 to 2011, the same 2 top causes remain. In other words, given all the funding and hype, that hasn't altered the mortality statistics for cancer. Now, my personal interpretation is, in fact, cancer is number one, because the way these data is recorded, and we've seen this very recently with a member of the Kennedy clan, she was being treated for lung cancer, went to the gym, died of a cardiac event. But in fact, the drugs she had received for lung cancer eliminate 30% of cardiac muscle. So actually, she was killed by her chemo for her lung cancer. It wasn't a true cardiac event. And I think these figures are slightly distorted now. And interestingly, I think we're going to find when the next census comes out that diabetes will be at the top third cause of death as opposed to car accidents, which it was at the last census. And diabetes is closely related to cancer, and hence the two very much go together because of the very high period of inflammation that precedes a diagnosis of diabetes. In Ontario, about 30% of the cancers are prostate cancer and about 30% of breast cancer. And they're very, very comparable, although we're dealing with two different genders. But the important thing to note here is there has been no change despite the huge sums invested in cancer, irrespective of type. So, I'm probably going to shock you, but cancer's totally preventable. Why are we experiencing figures? They shouldn't be there. It is a preventable disease that requires a major lifestyle change. I quote Professor Agarwal at the MD Anderson Cancer Research Center. Again, this year, we have a very eminent gentleman in the shape of Martin Wiseman, project director for the World Cancer Research Fund, saying exactly the same thing. 2.8 cases of cancer are totally preventable each year. Now, we'll come on to prevention a little later on and explain, but I would like to make the distinction at this point because it's also very important. Early detection is not prevention. Early detection merely enables a disease of any kind to be treated in an easier fashion, and it's more accessible to the conventional medical arrangements. But it is not prevention, it is early detection. And that's where the province puts its money. Early detection, not prevention. So, what are we doing? Let's look at the causes. 95% of causes for all cancer are environmental, because cancer is fundamentally a disease of excess. Too much alcohol, smoking, incorrect diets, and lack of exercise. And that's true for every cancer and applies to you guys too. Only 5% is doctor-caused, which is iatrogenic, or genetic. But that's where all the money is, for the simple reason that's where they can make very large profits, because they are patenting the human genome and hence genetic medicine. But actually, for most people, that's irrelevant. So very briefly, the drugs that are used to treat prostate cancer all have major, huge side effects. Whether you're aware of them or not, they all do, and some of them are worse than others. And I've listed the four main classes, which is a monoclonal antibody that actually creates hyperthyroidism and has known for its cardiac events associations. Bisphosphonates, which are given in bone, which actually create an adverse situation, and now the FDA has admitted they're in fact carcinogenic, and I can talk a bit later about bisphosphonates. Anti-hormone therapy, which is the physiological basis for hormonal action in prostate cancer, i.e. antiandrogens. Now that therapy, the antiandrogen drugs, actually created the PSA test, because when they discovered those drugs, they had to find a justification for finding conditions to use them. That was why the PSA test came into being. Simple as that. Big Pharma had to sell a product. So working it backwards, they found a test which would test for a justification for using them. And finally, we have chemo. Basically, we have had no new chemo drugs for the last 50 years. Very simple. They arose out of the 1914-18 war, the use of mustard gas, refined in World War II with the use of platinum. A little slight variation when they brought out Taxol, with various brand names associated, and a refinement again on Herceptin. But there's nothing new for about 50 years in terms of chemo. However, chemo does a lot of damage, and I will come on to that later. So, focusing a little bit more on you guys, the majority of people who have prostate cancer have what's known as adenoma carcinoma. It is testosterone sensitive, hence the importance of androgen to depletion therapies. It arises in the peripheral posterior aspect of the prostate and is traditionally known to metastasize to the pelvis and the lymph nodes and bone. And metastasis occurs through the lymph nodes and the invasion of tissues, as it incidentally does with all cancers. So, again, focusing a little bit more on prostate cancer, we have a number of etiologies, some of which are unproven, but it is a multifactorial process. The age is rare before 50, though that is changing, and changing quite radically, due to lifestyle. And a mean age on presentation of 75 at the current time, that again is changing, it's coming down. Ethnicity, common in Europe, North America, rare in China, although that's changing because the Chinese are adopting a Western lifestyle, and it is the lifestyle issues with all cancers that creates the problem. Genetic, we have a particular gene involved, although there are a couple of others, but that's the most common one, occurs in men and women, you may recognize it. Dirt, weight is a huge issue, so is a sedentary lifestyle, and the precursors very often are BPH, benign prostatic hyperplasia, and prostatitis. So, focusing a little bit more deeply, we know around 20% of prostate cancers actually are viral in origin. We think about 10% are related to vasectomy. And interestingly, that same figure occurs with women who've had tubal ligation. We're not entirely sure the reasons why, but clearly there's an interference with hormonal pathways. Toxin exposure, I think that's fairly self-evident, whether it's smoking or aluminium or whatever. Certain things are bad for the human being, and that's toxins, end of story. Bacterial infection is a common originator for cancers, including prostate cancer, and expresses itself quite often as prostatitis. Even 20 years before or so, you've actually had a diagnosis of prostate cancer. Alcohol is a known factor. Testosterone and related drugs is, of course, the most common and known factor. And insulin-like growth factors closely involved the cell proliferation and death. And here we come back to Otto Warburg, because the ILG factors is all about sugars and too much circulating in the human body. So, focusing a little bit more away from the details of prostate cancer to my side of things, medical herbalism, which treats prostate cancer, but we have low-risk solutions. We have, as Paracelsus said 500-600 years ago, everything man needs to maintain good health can be found in nature. We use that nature, i.e. plants, and our true task as scientists is to find these things. In other words, to provide the scientific evidence which validates and underpins their use. And we have a fantastic and huge library now which provides that evidence. And more importantly, and this is going to be touched on again when we come to the issue of testing, men with significant comorbidity, in other words, conditions other than prostate cancer, were often overtreated for low-risk prostate cancer. And I have a classic patient at the moment who has thyroid cancer, but he also has a prostate condition. And I am so relieved that when he first came to me, his prostate physician had not gone ahead and done surgery or anything. And despite all the bad news surrounding his thyroid cancer, we're actually stopping that and we're reducing the impact on the prostate. We couldn't have done that if he'd had surgery. So there's a huge issue about over-treatment for a low-risk prostate cancer condition, and is very contraindicated when there are conditions for comorbidity, in other words, other health issues. But because conventional medicine is organized vertically, not horizontally, we get the over-treatment. So, looking at conventional approaches. I've summarized it as cut, burn, poison. All conditions, including prostate cancer. You have the benefit of watchful waiting. The reason for that, even if they haven't come clean and told you, is very simply, until tumors of a certain size, they cannot be surgically removed. Hence, watchful waiting. And, of course, the implications of removing the prostate, which are horrendous. So we have a golden opportunity, as far as I'm concerned, to prevent any cut, burn, or poison. Orchiectomy, prostatectomy, radiotherapy, and chemotherapy are all very bad news. They actually enhance and upregulate cancer in various pathways. Androgen depletion therapy is the only one that does not have significant adverse effects in that way. So, we've got the vertical integration of the profession. We have a conflict of interest coexisting with big pharma, conventional doctors, and hospitals. They are not separate, and academia. They are not separate. For example, a doctor may have a contract with big pharma to do research, so you will get that big pharma's drug. You won't necessarily get the one that's best for you. His perspective will be enhancing his financial opportunity. It's tragic because it means you're not getting optimum care. We have the UK and the US advancing integration of medical herbalists and conventional medicine, but sadly not here in Ontario. In the UK and the US, it's been driven by two different factors. The UK, they're running out of money. It's very simple. We're a very cheap, proven alternative. In the US, it's because so many of those with cancer have to pay for their own treatment. They hate the bills, and they hate the fact that it doesn't work. So they now are saying, well, hang on, I want to look at alternative means. I was recently at a conference in May in Oregon, where at the end of the conference, the gentleman organizing, called Danny Yant, said that he just had a call from the president of Johns Hopkins saying that his wife had cancer. He didn't want her to be treated at Johns Hopkins in the oncology section. Would Donnie please treat her? Is that ever an vindication for alternative medicine? And Donnie practices much like I do. The gentleman said very clearly, he said, I could be struck off for suggesting it to my patients, but as it's within my own family, I'm free to do what I feel is the most optimum care for them. So in Ontario, we have a problem. We have virtually no integration whatsoever. And recently, the College of Physicians and Surgeons, in fact, put out a paper trying effectively to ban all forms of alternative therapy. Such a sadly medieval approach. And in Ontario as well, we have appalling path lab reports. Your path lab report should be your critical marker of how you are going to approach the next stage after a biopsy, whether it's surgery, chemo, radiation, or somebody like me. Because your PATH report can tell you your mitotic index, the type of cancer you have, the proliferation factor, and all these things. They don't do them. They ignore them. It's absolutely tragic. And it's not an expensive process, and I'm quite sure they have the facilities to do it. But unless we start asking, where are these markers, where is this data, they're not going to change. So very importantly, if you're in that position, start asking questions. As I've mentioned, there are no new drugs. End of story. And there's really been no innovation for the last 30 years. There have been some new drugs with different names, but the mechanism action has been identical. So it's a money exercise, tweaking something to put it into a new patent life. It's not actually a new drug, despite all the funding and hype. And that phrase came from a Toronto-based academic 5 years ago. Conventional medicine also does not address the causes of cancer or prostate cancer, and it very much has a formulaic effect and approach. So let's go on to that formulaic approach. surgery. That's the next thing after watchful waiting. That's what they want to start doing. Eli Jones in 1895 and Peters in 2005 and several others later have both observed surgical removal of the primary tumor activates cancer. So by keeping the tumor in your body to start off with, it actually suppresses any advance of cancer. It's a complex mechanism. Once you remove that tumor, they send out emergency signals via the bloodstream to activate seedlings that are already in your body. Because don't forget, cancer is an endocrine metabolic disease. Throughout your body for 10 to 15 years before your tumor manifests itself, wherever it manifests itself. So by removing the original tumor, you're actually upregulating everything. I actually compare cancer to the Taliban. If you take out the headquarters of an organization, all those backstops get activated in every nook and cranny. They're much more difficult to find and deal with than if you had left the primary tumor in place and dealt with it. Radiation, the next favorite. Radiation destabilizes DNA in your body. That is exactly what cancer aims to do. So by having radiation, you're actually helping cancer. You're activating the destabilization of DNA in your cells. It also burns. Well, we know that. But what does burning do? Burning sets up a process of high inflammation. Where does cancer start? Through a long-term process of high inflammation. And there is no evidence to show that radiation actually resolves cancer. It may delay, but there's no evidence to show it actually, quote-unquote, cures. Chemo. Chemo is of limited value. Again, it's a delaying mechanism very often, which is why they always quote 5 years, because after 5 years, the figures collapse. It's highly destructive to the whole body, and it does not address causes. And remember, chemo only operates when the cells that are cancerous are in S phase. And this is very important because your cell goes through various phases. Cancer applies in all phases, but it's only effective for those cells that are in S phase, despite the damage it does. So you're getting a lot of damage with very limited benefit. So, yes, there is a better way. We, or I as a medical herbalist, provide the links between the diagnosis, the surgery, the path lab, the treatment, refining the protocol, as well as dealing with the environment, homeostasis and prevention. And I'm quoting Donnie Yance on that because I thought he summarized it extraordinarily well. And I have added all on an evidence base. So if I'm going to say X, I can tell you exactly why I'm saying it. And I support this with scientific evidence that's publicly available in a website called www.pubmed. Its official description is a bit longer, just put in PubMed, and it's all there, and it's the same database that every oncologist will use, or every doctor can use if he so chooses, or she so chooses. The other aspect is, I took Socrates on board, just as I have taken the other physicians of 2,000 years ago. The part can never be well until the whole is well. In other words, we treat holistically, because cancer is an endocrine metabolic disease. It is in the whole body, not just a tiny part of you. So I have to look at that whole body and see what's out of balance, what's not working very well, and put the whole thing together. Sometimes I compare it to a jigsaw, where you've got one piece of the jigsaw missing, but that affects the whole picture because the tension is different, the continuity is different, the effectiveness is different. You have to get every single piece in harmony. In other words, homeostasis. So let's look at the drivers of prostatic problems in particular. There is always very poor blood flow to prostatic tissues because they're highly lipid. They're very fatty. And equally, in the same way, there's poor excretion for the same reasons. We have inflammation because it's cancerous. Or benign prostatic hyperplasia, the same thing applies. And inflammation can be driven by the drugs you've had, whether they're conventional or social, it doesn't really matter. We know another driver of prostatic problems is the fact that your immune systems were either weak to start off with or have been disrupted, and that includes excess hormones, which in turn too affect the immune system. We know that cancer, through a somewhat complex process, decreases immune surveillance. And we know that there is always blockage in lymphatic tissues. That's how things get excreted out of the body to start off with. And there may well be bacteria and viruses as well. I think the element of viruses is very under-researched and under-reported in cancer. But time and time again, it comes up. And don't forget, viruses mutate the whole time. Even if you find a virus and you decode it on day one, it could have mutated by day 10. So it's a hugely complex process. We also know that every cancer sufferer has had, either recent or in the past, bodily and mental stress issues, whatever they may be caused by. And more importantly, there are always other conditions associated with cancer. And particularly here in the province of Ontario, we have subclinical hypothyroidism, which is virtually endemic. And that in turn, because it's a thyroid, affects all metabolic processes in the body. So if you've got a poorly functioning thyroid, then nothing else is going to work terribly well. Imagine the fact you don't do a tune-up on a car. You know exactly what the problems are. Your thyroid does the tune-up on your metabolic processes. None of this, please note, is addressed by surgery, chemo, or radiation. So my objectives are very simple. I've got to reverse all that. I've got to decrease inflation. I've got to strengthen bodily resistance, vitality. I've got to reduce, eliminate bacteria. I've got to reduce, eliminate, control viruses. I have to manage the stress aspect. I have to manage the excess hormones and the fact that the body is not working properly. I have to boost your immunity, increase it, and increase your immune surveillance. In other words, I've got to outwit those clever cancer cells. I have to decrease the congestion that's in the body, whether it's in the prostate or anywhere else, doesn't really matter. And I have to increase that lymphatic drainage. I use the word detox because there are not many simple words, but I have to detox the body as well. Then finally, I have to use cytotoxic herbs to finally kill those pesky cancer cells so they can no longer proliferate and do damage, and return the body to its normal state. So I actually address all the drivers of prostatic conditions. I don't approach it the same way as the conventionals do, and it's almost, one could say, the reverse. Now, there are about 27, 28 pathways in cancer, in simple, very simple terms. We have plants that block every one of those pathways, all evidence-based. That evidence data is huge. For example, garlic, which inhibits viruses, creates apoptosis, i.e. kills cancer cells, reduces inflammation, a host of other things. We've got over 44,000 papers detailing exactly what it does and how it does it. We therefore can use plants to give you an individualized treatment, because no one of you in this room is the same. You're all different. And your needs are all going to be different. Orthodox medicine can't do that. I can alter dosages. I can also alter plants. I can block pathways at one time. I can stop and block other pathways at another time. I can totally individualize your treatment. And because plants work on many biochemical levels, I can get several things done at once. And it's called synergy of plants, but they are so complex, you have to use the whole plant. You can't use synthetic extracts or bits of a plant that have been patented. Won't have the same effect. It's a complex process, but that's very, very important to take on board, and I'll come back to that later. But equally, because plants work on so many levels, you'll see the same name appearing time after time, even though I may be using it for a slightly different reason. So all chronic conditions are caused by persistent inflammation. The inflammatory cascade, and I don't know how much of this you know, but is governed by eicanosoids, which you might know as COX-1 or COX-2 inhibitors. And they in turn produce prostaglandins, leukotrienes, and tumor necrosis factors, tumor growth factors. Unhealthy diet and lifestyle creates a chronic feedback loop of the prostaglandins and keeping the body in an inflammatory state. Hence, hugely important in treating cancer, diet and lifestyle. That inflammation promotes cancer via angiogenesis. In turn, it increases what we call veg factors, which cause the cells to proliferate. And here we have the interleukin growth factor. Remember I talked about IL before, glucose, which in turn is influenced by age, weight, and exercise. I shouldn't have put that in twice. But we've got loads of inflammatory herbs, and I've just listed three here. Boswellia, you might know as frankincense, as old as time, and the three wise men. Curcuma longa, which is turmeric, an absolutely fantastic plant. And salix, which you might be familiar with because the willow goes into cricket bats, but also because salicylic acids, and that's in turn is where aspirin was derived from. But aspirin is not the same, so and I can discuss that later. So I'm dealing with inflammation, I'm strengthening the body. I'm looking at all aspects of the body. I've just provided as one example the heart, because the older you get, that becomes more of an issue, it becomes a bit tired. The elimination of bacteria and viruses, and more importantly, I look at the role of the thyroid. I mentioned that we have subclinical hypothyroidism here in Ontario because there is a complete absence of iodine in our local soil. So all our local fruits and vegetables don't have iodine. We need iodine to function. And most people do not eat sufficient fish or take fish oils to compensate for that factor, or vegetables and so on that specifically contain iodine. So people nutriently, or from a nutrition perspective, tend to have insufficient iodine. That in turn makes the thyroid not work very well. It's further complicated by the very high level of carbs people eat, which contain bromine. And that is a food processing choice that they put bromine into all forms of carbs because it makes it much easier from a food processing point of view. But bromine binds to iodine. So you deplete your thyroid function again. And in nearly every single oncologist, unless they're dealing with thyroid cancer, ignores the thyroid. But it's fundamental to getting over cancer because they have no drugs to deal with subclinical conditions, i.e. if you're at the outer edge of the parameters but inside, i.e. it's not an alert. They have no drugs to deal with that at all. I have wonderful herbs. I can put you straight back to where you should be. And that in turn means that's a huge boost to normalizing your metabolic processes and inhibiting cancer. Another aspect, and again we come back to conventional medicine has nothing to offer, we have what's known as the GAS syndrome, the general adaptation syndrome. Hans Sale, who is a Canadian, did absolute seminal work on this between the wars, and this is now known worldwide. Stress is known to deplete immunity. Stress is very involved with your adrenal glands and your hypothalamus. It increases the rate of prostate growth. It releases the pro-inflammatory cytokines and in turn stimulates everything. So stress is a huge issue, not just because you've got cancer, but in how cancer arrived. So you must deal with this if we're going to have a positive outcome. Guess what? We've got lots of plants to deal with. We generally call them adaptogens. Astragalus is milk vetch. Glycyrrhizae is licorice. Withania is withania. And panaxidin, saying you may well have heard of because of the Chinese. There are others, and the Russians have done amazing work on this because they found by using them, they could get Olympic athletes to optimum performance. But there are large numbers of adaptogens, and that is always used in any herbal cancer treatment. Now, we have to manage hormones. Again, conventional medicine is very poor at managing hormones. They do have one or two anti-androgen drugs, which aren't too bad, But hormones are much more complex than that. They originate in a number of tissues in the body, but primarily the most important thing for hormones is actually the HPA axis, the hypothalamus axis, and the thyroid, because that governs secretion into the body. And it's not just testosterone we're dealing with, although for the purposes of this talk, this is the only one I'm focusing on because it's the most emotional and the most well-known for you guys. But we're talking about testosterone produced in the Leydig cells, then in turn going over to the hypothalamus, which I mentioned. Then we have a feedback with the pituitary and the thyroid, and then it goes into circulation. Now, most is bound to SHBG. When it's not bound, it causes problems. And then the leftover goes into the free unbound form, which targets the various tissues, like the prostate, the adrenals, the skin, the muscle and bone, and so on, where it is irreversibly converted into a more potent form called dihydrotestosterone, which in then turn converts to something else. But if you've got too much circulation testosterone, that's what happens. It goes into dihydrotestosterone. Now, guess what? We have herbs that block every single one of those hormonal pathways. Well proven, well validated, clinical trials, the bit. But of course, a conventional person doesn't use them. They're not qualified to use them, not allowed to use them because they're not trained. I am. So, guess what? Before we come to the formation of testosterone, can anyone give me one of the drugs that is commonly given, particularly to men, that causes huge problems in this cascade of hormones? Does anyone know? It's called a statin. Class of drugs, Lipitor. That inhibits the formation of cholesterol. If you inhibit cholesterol, you inhibit your immune system, you destroy it, you leave a door wide open for pathogens. Not only that, but you inhibit the correct formation of all hormones. Now, assuming you've got a correct formation of hormones, I'm just going to go back a bit for a minute, you actually have got something called, which I'm very sure you're very familiar with, called saw palmetto. Now, saw palmetto actually blocks dihydrotestosterone far better than any conventional drug, and it's well proven. There is another plant called nettle. You know that pesky stuff that stings you? Nettle root does exactly the same thing, but in a slightly different way and with slightly different emphasis. It's not as well validated in clinical trials, because don't forget, clinical trials are motivated by the desire to make money rather than desire to prove a plant, which of course no one can patent, no one is allowed to patent. So, having dealt with the hormones, we'll come on to increased immunity. All cancer, including prostate, is linked to a depressed or depleted immune system, which reduces immune surveillance. We have plenty of herbs which deal with this. Echinacea, purple coneflower, milk vetch. Here we have milk vetch coming up again, panax coming up again, and a plant called phytolacca, or poke. And it does exactly that, it pokes. Now, you may recall we had an eminent Canadian scientist who died recently of pancreatic cancer in Montreal. And there was quite a bit of publicity on the research he had done, particularly with dendritic cells in the lymph tissues. All those plants stimulate those dendritic tissues and those dendritic cells. So in other words, we have ready-made a plant which exactly do what he had researched and identified, but of course it's not in a patentable form, therefore can't make money out of it. And I'd like you to refer back to something I mentioned earlier, the bisphosphonate, zealotronic acid. We have in our bone marrow the stem cells for new blood. They're called hematopoietic stem cells. And they get distributed through the lymph, the spleen, and the skin to produce these dendritic cells, which are so wonderful in counteracting cancer and promoting the immune system and correcting immune surveillance. Well, bisphosphonates, zoledronic acid, kills those stem cells. So here we have another example of a conventional treatment, conventional drug, actually not helping somebody who has cancer. because it aids cancer's ability to evade our normal immune systems. So finally, I have to detox. We detox all the major organs. In other words, the bowels, the lungs, the urosystem, that they're all in working order. Very boring, very primitive, but absolutely fundamental to how we perform. We have to ensure proper drainage of the tissues, and we have to stimulate the circulatory tissues, both for delivery purposes and removal purposes. And again, proper nutrients. Diet is fundamental, because without a proper diet, you're never going to get drainage. You're never going to get those nutrients to the correct places. So please, please bring your partners on board. Diet is critical to a successful outcome treating cancer. High fruits and vegetables. Avoid refined carbs for two reasons. It's sugar and it's bromine. Probiotics, which means goat's yogurt. Nothing else, goat's yogurt. High protein, but not in large quantities. And minimize fats. Olive oil's great, canola oil's rubbish. So you have a lot of work to do on your diet if you want an optimum resolution to cancer. Lifestyle. It's a life-changing event to have cancer. It's hyped up to glory. The big pharma and the orthodox profession operate a marketing model of fear. There's nothing to be afraid of. It's perfectly comparable. But you have to change your lifestyle, because it was your lifestyle that got you into the pickle in the first place. In other words, exercise, very obvious reason, gives you better oxygen into the prostate and other tissues. If you're a smoker, stop, because you're actually killing your cells in your lungs, which carry that oxygen to the tissues. If you're overweight, you've got to address that. It's a key factor, because hormones, through something called leptin, actually resides in fat tissue. So if you have an excess of fat tissues, you're going to keep two tanks worth of testosterone when you actually want to control and minimize your testosterone, because it is a driver for prostatic cancer. You need to learn how to relax. We come back to stress, and I've just simply put two or three things in here. Hydrotherapy, because it's particularly good for prostatic tissues. Tai Chi, Qigong, or acupuncture. Acupuncture can relieve pain. It's great for stress. It does nothing else. There is no cure element in acupuncture. It has a lot of benefits for stress and pain, but none. And the Chinese were very clever, because they identified 2,000 years ago the pain pathways, the nerve pathways, exactly in the body. And that's what their meridians follow. No map today produced through the Western scientific system has mapped better than the meridians, which is an extraordinary statement. But marry those two pieces of knowledge together, and boy, you get a more positive result. Then finally, cytotoxicity. Chemo is cytotoxic. It kills cells indiscriminately without the body, which is why it does so much damage, and it does it long term. We had this week, for example, a report out for people who had chemo 25 years ago and had survived. Over 50% had died. But there were two things that came out of that. One, a very, very significant level for a left-sided cardiac event, directly attributable to chemo 25 years earlier. So it's not short-term damage, it's long-term damage. And I see a lot of women, too, now, who had chemo much earlier for something like breast cancer, and they're getting into all sorts of trouble now with other problems as a direct result. Plants can be cytotoxic, but the difference is it is able to identify those infected cells versus the non-infected. So it's selective about what it kills. And I've just listed a few of those that we use. Mistletoe, they have not turned into a conventional drug. Periwinkle, they have. Yew is Taxol. Mayapple, they haven't touched yet, although they've done something very similar based on its tubulin actions. And Artemisia annua, which is extremely effective. Incidentally, the Chinese use it for malaria, and no conventional drug has been able to beat malaria. Right, integration doesn't exist here, very sadly. It should, and I would love to be part of a supportive team, but we have to face the reality. It's not there. We have a huge education process to do how one side can help the other. Interestingly, in BC, we don't have that issue. My mentor is teaching oncologist in Vancouver General Hospital. She's also teaching American oncologists, and when I was in the States that I mentioned earlier, I actually had two oncologists approach me out of New York saying, could we work together? Could we find a way of working together for the benefit of our patients? Because we know we need you, and you can do so much more than I can. We don't appear to have that kind of thinking yet here. The Lancet, which is a very eminent medical journal, most physicians recognize the name instantly, stated about 7 years ago, phytotherapy, which is another word for medical herbalism, should be the primary treatment for BPH. It went on in that same article basically to suggest it should be for cancer, but the politics, of course, wouldn't allow it to do so. Both in the UK and in the US, medical herbalism is involved in the treatment protocols for cancer because they are getting more and more aware to is beneficial for the patient. Now, I put this slide in really at the request of Al because the whole issue of PSA testing has come up recently. The PSA testing, as I mentioned, came up because there were anti-androgen drugs. In the UK, there is nothing like the testing for anything that we have in North America. So high PSA numbers, they don't really get too agitated about. And that is reflected in the second trial, the ERSPC trial, which was done in Europe. And again, we come back. It might reduce specific mortality, i.e. prostate cancer mortality, which is the relatively small number of figures, but a significant cost of overdiagnosis and overtreatment. And overdiagnosis and overtreatment is very much related to how many dollars you've got to spend. So again, in the UK, there isn't the great rush for PSA testing. The American trial, the PLCO trial, was actually started because men for over 75 are no longer tested in the States because of the huge issues with positive-negative outcomes and being very misleading. So again, we found PSA screening not significantly to reduce death from prostate cancer. So they're actually saying the same thing, but in slightly different ways. And don't forget, if you do have a PSA with a high level, you tend to be rushed into biopsy. And biopsy is a very, very inflammatory process. It takes actually a long time to recover from. You might think you're recovered from it, but inside and underneath, it's much longer. A baby takes 9 months to be made. And any damage to any tissues in the body actually also take about 9 months for full repair, even though you think you can use them and you can't understand why you're not fully functioning. So PSA testing is not a be-all and end-all. And although probably it will be kept here in Ontario because it's a politically emotive thing, in fact, there are much simpler ways to test to see if you have a high probability of cancer through a simple blood test. There are four key markers you can ask for in a simple blood test, which will give you a much greater predictive outcome than rushing into PSA and biopsy. Again, it's not used because most family physicians who do the preliminary blood test are not aware of this. Because I treat cancer, I'm more than aware. And so often I have to fight for those four key markers, like homocysteine, which is very straightforward to do, not a problem, and far easier to do. So, how do I treat? Well, I've told you the underlying principles of anti-inflammatories and all the rest of it. So, I then have a first consultation which takes a minimum of 2 hours, and we try to address both the immediate symptoms and the physiological causes. We go through extensively diet, lifestyle, exercise advice, and then I suggest appropriate supplements, and I'll come back to that. I also produce a totally personalized bottle of medicine, which is liquid herbs in a compound. In the UK, I'm allowed to use the word prescription. I'm not allowed to use the word in Ontario, but it's essentially identical. I choose the plants that are most appropriate to the person and their medical presentation. So having evaluated them, brackets diagnosed, I then decide what's the most important thing in that person to start dealing with. We have a whole slew of issues we've got to address. You can't address them all at once. The most important ones. And I use them based on the good evidence for their use. I select the supplements based on a patient's blood work and the supplement's evidence of efficacy. Now, nearly every cancer sufferer is deficient in zinc and selenium, two fundamental minerals for the body. You can't get enough if you have cancer from your diet. You therefore need to take more to keep the tank topped up. But you don't want a supplement that says it's got 12 things in it. You want specific and a specific dose to be effective. Now, I'm slightly going ahead of myself, but it is very, very important to remember any supplement bought over the counter has no medical efficacy by law. In other words, whatever its marketing phrase, it is not allowed by law to have a medical result, because only drugs can have medical results. So in other words, my plant medicine, which are plant drugs, can have a medical result. That's permitted. I'm permitted to compound. And you go and fulfill a prescription that has a medical result. Supplements do not. And I know they're very big business here. I know people spend vast quantities of money. I always jokingly say, well, I'll save you a fortune on supplements. Most of them are a waste of time. Because they're not in the right dosages, for starters. There's a lot of filler and a lot of inappropriate stuff there. Recently, I had a woman, she'd been spending about $1,000 a month on supplements. And she does have two very serious conditions. And I went through these supplements, and I actually, in one of them, totaled up through whatever it was, the half dozen or the dozen, that had chromium in them. She actually had a lethal dose of chromium in her as a result of taking all these various supplements. Because each dose of chromium within the supplement was not medically effective. But if you added the whole lot together, you get an adverse reaction because it's too much. But it was all in the small print, and to be fair, you're not likely to know this. She didn't know this. It was my job to go through it with a fine-tooth comb. As I said, I've saved her about $1,000 a month because that's what she was spending. Utterly ridiculous. So I do give you supplements, but they're very specific supplements. And they are pharmaceutical quality and grade, which no supplement over the counter is. And that's also important to remember. I also constantly monitor the patient's progress and adjust the protocol accordingly. So in cancer, I normally see somebody for about 2.5 years if they, you know, want to have the condition resolved with me. That means at least for the first 18 months, seeing them every month, because there's constant, you know, monitoring the whole way. If the Taliban pops up there, I've got bang, he's dead. But I don't know when he's going to pop up there, except through experience and knowledge. But I have to make sure that I've got a gun ready if he pops up there by the time of the next. And you can monitor this whole thing and adjust accordingly. And you can fine-tune the whole time. Now, some of the plants I use for specifically for prostatic cancer, turmeric. It mediates 98 metabolic pathways. It inhibits and has been shown to inhibit in all sorts of ways 14 types of cancer. It is the most amazing plant. It's not available as a supplement over the counter. You have to have the whole plant at a certain dosage level and a certain standardization. Serranera cerulatus or palmetto, known to be an inhibitor of 5-alpha reductase. We come back to the slide I mentioned about preventing dihydrotestosterone. It performed better than finasteride in clinical trials. Finasteride commonly used in benign prostatic hyperplasia and also prostate cancer in its early stages. Capsicum minimum, KN, has been shown to inhibit growth of androgen-independent cancer cells carrying the common P53 mutation. P53 is a very, very interesting gene. It can face pro-cancerous, it can face anti-cancerous. It's called a Janus gene. It's wonderful. My job to make sure that it's on my side, not cancer's side. And I can do that with plants. Semicifuga racemosa, another one, great on the hormonal side. Black cohosh, which our Canadian Indians and our Inuit used for years and years and years before we appeared on the scene to great effect, particularly for women. More plants. Here we have nettle coming up again, inhibits DHT and acts in various other pathways too, including subclinical hypothyroidism. Hydrangea, another one, that stabilizes the matrix of cells, in other words, that stops cancer progressing, becoming proliferative. Akeo, which is yarrow, a plant as old as time, again, very anti-inflammatory, diuretic, has been shown to have terrific effect in this kind of cancer. And skullcap, which we owe very much the research to the Russians because of its effect on the anti-inflammatory cascade. Here we have the COX-2 inhibition. Vioxx was a drug they came out with, which was rapidly banned because it caused more cardiac events than it cured. So we have lots of plants. We have evidence. I'm very happy to send anybody a full bibliography. It is fairly technical, but if you want to leave me your email address, I will happily send it to you, no problem. I will also happily send you a copy of this presentation if you'd like it. Just leave me your email address and I will do that. Now, vitamin D. I brought this up because, again, Al wanted me to. Vitamin D is not terribly well understood in scientific circles. There are 8 forms, but the one that you know best is vitamin D3. That's the bit we get through sunshine and exercise. It is involved in the pathogenesis of a huge amounts of disease, especially cancer, and the androgen signaling pathway. Now, most Canadians are deficient because they don't get out there 365 days of the year for 40 minutes of sunshine, even though we have a huge amount of sunshine. They don't get out there. And this is a very useful reference here because it showed how important vitamin D was and what an economic burden it placed directly on Canadians as opposed to any other nationality. And McGinty's approach of making you pay for your own vitamin D test is actually economically very counterproductive. So, turmeric. Again, Al would like ask me to mention this in a little bit more detail. I have put up 2 pieces of recent research here relating to turmeric and its absolutely fantastic ability to deal with cancer, but it is unpatentable. No one wants to take and turn it into a drug because they can't. They can't patent it. But I, as a medical herbalist, can use it because I used it in its entire form. In other words, there's no patentability issues. There's quite a bit of research, not research, but testing going on in the States where they've taken extracts or a little bit. But turmeric only works when you have the whole plant. There isn't a single direct action pathway, and there isn't a single extract which has the same effect. And that was also true for most plants, which is why when they try and copy plants into a drug, there are always huge side effects, the simplest being metformin, you might know, which is a synthetic copy of Galliga officinalis, goat's rue. Well, actually, that inhibits B12. And B12 is fundamental to good blood supply. So you get that kind of reaction going on. So, supplements. It's illegal to sell a medically effective dose. I've touched on that already. They're not of pharmaceutical grade, and if you're dealing with diseases like cancer, they must be to have an effect. They have no evidence base. They're a food supplement. They're sold as a... They don't have to have an evidence base until recently. And actually, Health Canada is now starting to clean up the act. And many of the more outrageous ones are disappearing off the shelves. They use scientific extrapolation from research papers and apply them to a product because some of that product might be within the supplement. That's not effective. It is, in my view, highly misleading and leads to all these things that you see on the internet, and you think, oh, that'll fix the problem, it'll do nothing of the sort. It's marketing. And often, contents and label do not match. Most supplements are totally unnecessary. Good diet is what you need to focus on. That is the key, because that's the way your body can absorb nutrients in its best format. And, of course, taking a supplement doesn't actually reflect, do you need that amount? Do you need more? Do you need less? It's you we have to focus on. Not a marketed product applicable to the whole of North America. And there is no research, there is no evidence addressing the issues of polysupplementation. In other words, you're free to go out and buy all sorts of supplements, just like that lady did, consume a lot of them without even thinking of side effects and complications and polypharmacy. And polypharmacy is very poorly addressed with conventional drugs. So if you put polysupplementation on top of that, you're potentially asking for a lot of problems. So Protocell, again, Al asked me to touch on this. There is no evidence for this product whatsoever in a peer-reviewed journal. That is admitted on its website, and I checked it against in PubMed and Science Direct. I couldn't find anything either. So they've come clean on that. It is a supplement with all the typical issues I've mentioned already with supplements. It makes claims but has no evidence to show that it can cross the blood-brain barrier, which is quite an important issue in cancer because the hypothalamus is inside the brain. And I looked at the contents and I kind of went, oops, copper. That's a no-no in cancer. Copper drives cancer. So you don't want to put more into your body. Croconic acid is from the crocus saffron plant. Catechol is from green tea. Leuconic acid is from azalea. Rhodizonic acid is from rhododendrons. They have applications in plant medicine and in cancer. For example, saffron actually inhibits the tubulins of cancerous cells, but not in this form. Sodium, you never ever want to put in additionally into your body. And potassium can be positive and negative. So having just looked at the contents, my advice to you guys is don't touch it, whatever the marketing claims. So I'm going to give you a couple of case histories. These two people I treated in the UK, which is why we have got slightly different terms, but you will get the gist. This gentleman, BMI of 28, that tells you he's overweight. He had long-standing conditions. UC is ulcerative colitis, highly inflammatory. And I have said already to you, inflammation breeds cancer. Huge poor diet, alcohol was through the roof, which is very typical in Britain, I regret to say. But he was taking no drugs, no supplements. On examination, he had an enlarged irregular prostate and a PSA of 28.1, which in the UK is not over the moon. They don't absolutely go AWOL here, but in the UK this is not exceptional. Okay, and then the Gleason scores for you. With no metastasis. So nothing adverse reported as far as progression outside the capsule. His conventional treatment was limited to antiandrogen therapy. Radiotherapy was not given, thank goodness, because of his ulcerative colitis. In other words, it would have burnt his insides to bits. However, we did ask that he be tested for celiac disease, and he was. And the diagnosis was confirmed because from taking the case history, it was patently obvious that he had celiac disease. So how did we treat him? We did produce some supplements for very good reasons. He was deficient in certain things, and some of these have direct pathways in prostate cancer. For example, lycopene, that comes from watermelon, tomatoes, pawpaw, very applicable for prostate cancer. Acidophilus was a probiotic because, of course, his ulcerative colitis, and so on. So having identified that he had celiac disease, we dealt with his diet and his lifestyle. And his initial mix, and as I've explained to you, one changes it over time, included these plants, some of which I'm sure you're familiar with, like saw palmetto. Others you may not be so familiar with, like red clover. But red clover is very useful for eliminating toxins out of tissues, but it also has an anti-estrogen pathway. So terribly useful. So we have a case history result. 2005, he was shown to have a PSA of 28.1. By 2007, he was down to 0.5. In other words, well within normal tolerances. And most of his other presenting problems had been resolved. Another similar case, this time it's a West Indian, poor urinary flow, having to get up at night to pee, blood in his pee, he couldn't ejaculate, chest pain, and marginally overweight. His past medical history included vasectomy. Here we go, hang on, cause of prostate cancer, very poor diet, no drugs or supplements, and his PSA was off the scale. His biopsy showed Gleason 9 grade 5, and he had osteosclerotic bone problems. Now, that does not mean it's metastasized bone. It just means he's got very poor bone health. But he had got it in a lot of places, and that opens the door for metastasis. So his conventional medicine, again, was the antiandrogens, the cocodamol for pain relief, and here we had the bisphosphonate, the zoledronic acid. Now, I don't think if it was today he'd get zoledronic acid because there is, at long last, they're starting to admit the problems with it. We gave him the supplements, again, totally relevant to his condition, strontium for bone health, particularly here, and lycopene, again, particularly for prostate cancer, selenium and zinc. Dietary and lifestyle modifications, essential. He worked very hard at those and contributed directly to the result. My prescription included, again, herbs I've mentioned, and Selegesic tabs were for pain relief. So he came in 2006 with a PSA of off the chart of 5,000, and by 2007 we were down to 0.7. No pain, no urgency, his flow was normal, and he didn't have to get up in the night to pee. But he made the adjustments. He made the adjustments on his diet, his lifestyle, he took his medicine religiously. Fantastic result. No chemo, no radiation, no surgery. Guy's back to normal. Yes, for the rest of his life, he's got to watch his diet and his lifestyle. But hell, he's got another 40 years to go. So, just a simple caution, I have mentioned that any plants I've discussed in this talk only to be used under professional medical guidance. You cannot get liquid plant tinctures anyway, but don't rush off to your herb counter because you can't get them there either. And a supplement is not the same thing. It's not advisable to self-treat, and a professional will recognize all the issues, that's why they're trained to do so, and also to deal with problems either caused or to coexist with orthodox drugs. Thank you very much for listening to me, and I'm very happy to take questions if any of you have got any. Sure. What do I do with this? Oh. Do I just turn it off?